blind guy looking, so.
No, there's only one part of it.
I'm going fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing, just to ease my mind.
And that's my cue, the ease the mind.
Yes, I think that's why we go fishing. You know, I go escapism fishing. We're going to start getting out and actually targeting species, sandbrim being one of them I want to target. I say Fish and Frank here, by the way, and at the store on 41 in Edgewater this coming Tuesday. Lots of uhs and ahs for me today. I usually don't much.
No.
But
you're a little off this
week. We often ah, though.
Yeah, I wish. I'd love to get back to a couple of ahs, but, you know, I don't think that's another mark off one of those things that, hey, probably ain't going to happen again, but we'll see. All right, 941-268-6460. 941-268-6460. Text us if you have a question. It's not set up as a phone, but it is set up to answer text messages. If you want to send us fish pictures, we'll put them up on fishandfranks.com on the fishing report, and then they're actually going to be on pretty much every social media site after that. But this coming Tuesday, we've got Rapala and Jim and Rodney coming down. They're going to be giving seminars on snook and bass and tarpon and the different lures and different techniques, and Rapala has such an extensive variety of everything. And you don't have to sign up. It's at the Fish and Franks seminar area right there at the store. You go into the main part of the store like you always do, go up into the rod and reel room, go through the red door and out into the back. But it holds 50, 60 people, so we're not worried about overpowering it. But the seminars are at 3 o'clock and 6:30 at night. You would have just attended one or the other. It's going to be the same seminar. But I think if you buy 3 Rapala lures, you get a free Rapala hat. So I'm pretty sure. But go to fishandfranks.com, fishing with no G, and you can click the seminar button, and that will allow you to see what's on there. Yeah, I don't know why it's... I went on trying to do it on my phone, and it's not working. So, and I clicked the wrong buttons again. All right, seminars. All right. And for some reason or another, it's not loading right.
It's just one of those moments.
Tuesday, May 21st, 3 p.m. and 6:30 p.m., Jim and Rodney with free swag. That's stuff we all get for all you old fellas like me. I had to have it explained to me, which means free stuff.
It's an abbreviated.
Buy 3 Rapala lures, and you get a free hat. So there's all kinds of, and you get the 3 lures, they hand you the hat. You don't have to mail it in or anything. It's all first run. Somebody said, why don't I have our shirts on the website? You know, why don't I sell, you know, like Fish and Frank's hats and shirts and knickknacks on the website and fishing tackle? Because if you are wearing something from Fish and Frank's, you were at Fish and Frank's.
Right.
We got a customer in John, English John. He gets stopped in London wearing his Fish and Frank's stuff. You know, and the cool part about it is, if you're wearing the hat, they know you pretty much you had to go to Fish and Frank's to get it. I think once it's on the internet, it kind of cheapens it.
Well, it's kind of like going to a concert and buying a t-shirt for your buddy who didn't attend the concert.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of the same.
But if you
principle.
Go, if you went on the internet and bought a t-shirt for a concert you didn't go to.
Right.
I don't think it has the same thing.
No, definitely doesn't have the same effect.
Am I off or on that?
No, I think that's a really cool way of looking at it. That if you see somebody with Fish and Frank shirt on, it's because they've been to the store.
Right.
Which I think is cool.
You know, one of my problems with traveling today is if I leave Port Charlotte, we have a McDonald's, a Walmart, and an Outback, and I'm going to drive to some town in Montana that has a Walmart, a McDonald's, and an Outback. There's no charm of distance in that. You know, it's the areas between the towns that are cool. But once you get into town, most of them are all the same. And I think once you put something on the internet, yeah, I can make more money, but is that the reason you should do it? I think I like the idea that if you're Fish and Frank's customer, we love you, we want you to come to the store. But I think that's how you should get it. It's all right, but anyway, I'm weird. All right. Yeah, I just don't know how to explain myself.
Right. That's a pretty good explanation. I mean, it's very true. Cause
yeah, I followed him for probably the first time in about a year, so that works for me.
The more confused I get, the more lucid
Frank
I get.
Frank logical to me, yeah.
Okay. All right. I can handle it, I think. I'm not sure. Anyway, let me know if I did or not. All right. That's part of Robert's job. This way he gets paid. Robert, was that all right?
That was good. It made perfect sense. It's all about the experience. I mean, you talk about the Fish and Frank's experience all the time, and that is part of it. You know, it's you were there and witnessed it and got the T-shirt to prove it.
Yeah. Been there, done that, got the T-shirt.
Right.
Okay. All right. Snook fishing, what's going on with that?
It's been pretty amazing out there. All of them are moving a lot out of the canals and down the east wall, west wall, out of the Peace River and Myakka River. They're all heading south and west, heading towards the passes. I mean, guys are seeing groups of 2 to 30 fish all over 30 inches. Some fish are well over the 40-inch mark in little groups. And they're making a pretty distinct beeline towards the passes.
These rains are helping.
Absolutely.
Believe it or not, if we don't get timely rains, a lot of snook die. Because they're born in the eggs are hatched in the fresh water, they sink to the bottom, they don't fertilize in the mud, they just die in the mud. But when the eggs are hatched out into salt water, the salt has the extra buoyancy to float the eggs, they become part of the plankton, all the little snooks swim out, and they go out, and the only thing after that is predators. But
right. Well, and a lot of people from up north aren't familiar with that because, you know, almost all of our saltwater species that I'm aware of are free-swimming egg layers. They don't build an actual nest on the bottom. So they rely on the tides, the current, and salinity to have those eggs free-floating around and move around. But if they actually sit still or settle to the bottom, especially upriver when the salinity can change from salt to fresh rapidly, it just smothers
in less than a day.
Yeah.
And without the salt, the eggs are not buoyant enough to float, so they sink to the bottom, and that their eggs hatch out in the mud, and that's just not going to work right.
Right.
So snook do spawn in fresh water, boys and girls. The snook that are in Lake Okeechobee and many other lakes and ponds in Florida, but you have 1 to 5% of the eggs that are actually going to hatch and become viable where they have live stuff come out of them. It takes salt water to do that. And that's why if we get rains like we're getting now where they get that touch of salt water, if a snook's living in a canal and he goes to the mouth of the canal and the water's salty, they'll spawn right there. Because they're not sticking their head up and go, oh, look, that's Dr. Joe's house, or oh, look, that's Cape Hayes. They're underwater. They go by the salinity. So if they get to the mouth of the canal, they will spawn right there. But if they get that bit of fresh water from these rains hitting them, they're going to move further and further out towards the Gulf until they get to the proper salinity. That's why the rains are critical. And we've had, for the last few years, we've had great timely rains. We have a massive snook population. I don't care what social media says. If you believe something you see from these, you know, Googans on social media, as polite as I can do it, about the snook populations, they're lying. They have absolutely no idea what the snook populations is. And because FWC locked up the report, they won't let us know what the snook populations are, if it's up, if it's down, or anything. So my assumption is same as it was before, or more, just judging from what I see, because when they won't make public, guy was in, he wants to sue, you know, and petition about getting fish reopened. I said, that's not what you should sue for. If you're going to go through all the trouble of starting a petition, hiring a lawyer, doing all this stuff, sue for the freedom of information. All we want to know is what the stock assessments are. Because if the stocks are low, we want the fishing kept closed. If the stocks are the same or higher, we want it back open.
Right.
But I don't want to sue somebody just to sue and start petitions for whatever. Let's do it for real reason. Let's do it for the information that is supposed to be ours anyway. Why are we having to sue FWC to get information out of them?
Shouldn't have. Right, and something smells fishy about the whole process.
That's why we have you here, so you can avoid those puns.
That's right.
You know, that's the thing about RJ. There's no pun involved.
None at all. But here we have, a season has been closed on a game fish, and we don't know what the numbers are, why they close it. So the suspicion is it was the pressure from social media to close and not a scientific decision being made. So I have a lot of trouble with them not letting us know what the stocks
are. And what
are.
We're talking about is simply that they closed snook, redfish, and trout, made them catch and release only until next May. And I mean, next May, that's a while.
Well, so, snook will be next September.
That's right, next September. It's over a year for the snook.
A year and a half.
And, you know, and there are people that grocery fish. I mean, they're going fishing to bring protein home. And snook and redfish are probably the two major fish that you can catch from shore, you know, of any decent size to do that with. And now you can't do it. Now we're talking a year before you can get back into snook again.
And I would say the biggest problem I have with it all is exactly as you've said, lack of understanding why they did it. But I'd say right now, Southwest Florida is paying the price. We have the lowest tourism of any May that I can remember. And my memory is pretty good for that stuff because it's money. Mm-hmm. For me, tourists are not, you know, okay, they crowd the roads or whatever. That's dollar signs in the cash register. And we have less tourists this year. Everybody's familiar with snowbird season. But snowbird season ends right around Easter, and then the beginning of May starts tourist season. And the tourist season goes to the 4th of July. So actual season in Southwest Florida goes from sometime in October, but definitely November through the 4th of July. That's the season we have down here. Part of it's snowbird and part of it's tourist. But we're not seeing the people coming to Florida. The charter boat captains as of June, into May and into June, are not being booked. The guys who are booked completely in March, April, they're not, a lot of them don't have charters, not to the extent they did. They've got days off. They were booked every day, most of the time with doubles, all through March and April. Now, hitting May, which should be the peak of tourists, tarpon, sharks, cobia, and I think a lot of it has to do with the closure of snook, redfish, and trout, because 90% of them aren't going to keep them anyway, but it's closed. And that's a big word, closed. When just snook was closed, people would come in and say, well, is there anything open down here? And of course there is. Let's talk about a little bit of that right now. Spanish mackerel, great eating fish if you eat them the same day.
Yeah, fresh. Definitely fresh. Same day or the next day, but not frozen. You know, Spanish mackerel from Cape Hayes out to 10 miles offshore, which 10 miles offshore has been a little sporty lately, but they have been getting quite a few Spanish mackerel out there, and basically just look for the birds, look for any free jumping Spanish out there, any schools of bait, and there's been Spanish mackerel from 10 inches all the way up to like 22 inches is the biggest one I've heard of in the last several days.
So, I classify them as a light tackle fish.
Oh, absolutely.
I really enjoy taking my crappie rods out.
Oh, that's ultra light tackle.
Yeah, I mean, a little 500 reel, 5.5-6 foot ultra light rod, 2 pound test monofilament, a little bit of steel leader, go out and try for the Spanish with that. Now, that's fun.
Sure.
That's challenging. Because with 2 pound mono, anything touches that line. You've got to have that rod way above your head. You're pulling it back in. It's very, very challenging. Use the least expensive stuff you can throw down the end of that because you're going to lose a few.
Absolutely.
And the other thing I do when I'm using that real light tackle At that moment, the barbs are all gone. I take a pair of pliers and I crush the any barbs, whether it's a single hook jig or a treble hook. I make sure I'm not using any barbs, because that way, if the fish does take it with them, the lure or whatever, it's going to fall out of their mouth. The barbs would retain it in their mouth. They're not going to be able to shake it out, really. But with no barbs, a couple of good head shakes, chances are that whatever it is going to just fly right out of the fish.
Yeah, no, it makes it a lot nicer for that.
So you really want to temper, you know, if you're going to go out and play, okay, I'm going to fish 2-pound mono, ultralight tackle, do all this, you think about yourself, the enjoyment you're going to get. Now, I think fish really have fun when they get on the end of the line, on the catch-release scenario anyway.
Right.
But they get to jump and shake around, and they get all, you know, I mean, alien abduction, you know. They go back going, George, I was up there, it was all bright and sunny, I could move around, there was no weight, and all of a sudden, boom, I'm back in the water. You don't believe me? What are you talking about? You're going to see their spaceships, you know.
You were drinking that sweet water again, weren't you, George?
Yeah, you were up drinking out of the river again, huh? All right. You know, fish don't drink.
Nope.
You know that? Fish don't drink.
I never considered that. They don't drink.
That's why most of them aren't as much fun as the people I hang around with.
Right.
But, they get the moisture from the other fish they eat, and whatever little bit of water comes in with the fish.
Yeah.
But just, they don't actually drink.
Just like, if I'm not mistaken, if you're basically stuck on a life raft out in the ocean and you're trying to survive, you actually can consume the eyeballs because that's got fresh water in it.
Well, there's
that's
a little bit of knowledge.
A big fish.
there's a little bit of knowledge for you if you ever find yourself stranded out in the middle of the ocean.
There was a couple guys that were stranded out for, I think it was like 5 months, the two of them were lost at sea, and that was their main way of getting hydrated, was the eyeballs.
Now, if you're
not a positive, it's 100% fact, but it makes sense because the eyes are full of a lot of liquid, and if it's a minor low level of saline for the retina to work properly, just the way our eyeballs do, it would make sense that it would be more fresh than salt.
Well, you drink the blood on the fish too. I mean,
mm-hmm.
That's not going to hurt you.
Not that I'm aware of.
So,
weird stuff to think about for the day.
Why can you drink the blood of a fish, but salt water would kill you? They're really almost identical in saline.
That I didn't know. I was going to guess. I was going to guess that they're not.
You can actually, the reason they think we came from creatures that started in the ocean is because our blood is almost the same as seawater, salt wise and stuff like that. The salt that we require to move around. Speaking of moving around, let's go on something else. All right.
Right.
But that was really off the rails, boys.
It was.
Well, you know, you
that
never
was a
know.
Long segment.
It might have been a gem that somebody can use 20 years from now. Some guy is going to be out on a raft somewhere, and he's going to catch a fish, and he's going to say, you know, I'm going to survive because I'm going to eat the eyeballs.
Maybe.
Okay. Well, if
but you never know.
You go to old, like when I was first going to Central America back in the 80s, you meet a family, you become friends with them, they have you over for dinner. The honored guest eats the eyes out of the fish. That's reserved for the honored guest.
Wow.
And, yeah. So, been there, done that. I don't have a T-shirt, but I could make one up. Let's see. What's up with hill tides? What the heck is a hill tide? Why is it important? All I hear about with tarpon fishing, oh, I'm going to go fish the hill tide. And you hear about that, right?
Yes.
You're not a big tarpon guy, but you... Everybody's
in my younger days, I liked fishing for tarpon, but now that I'm an old man, I don't like getting beat up all the time. So,
but that's the number one phrase, you know, when people talk about tarpon fishing.
Yeah,
they're kind
of synonymous with tarpon. Well, what a hill tide is basically is every full moon.
Looks like a tsunami going through Boca Raton Pass. The tide comes up 30 feet, just works its way right through the pass.
No.
No.
No. That would be in Nova Scotia, maybe.
Okay.
But no, the hill tide basically almost always occurs in the full moon of May and June, which are the two strongest, highest tides of the year naturally, just like January and February are two lowest tides of the year by nature. lunar table, all that good stuff, gravitational pull. So tarpon, just like snook, need that high salinity for their eggs, and what they'll do is at hill tide, that happens 2 to sometimes 3 days before the full moon and 2 to 3 days after the full moon is technically when that tide is going out in the late afternoons and into the evening, sometimes well into nighttime, midnight-ish. It's a strong tide, and I think it's going, I don't know exactly, but I think it's going from a 2.1 tomorrow to a minus 2 or something like that. We're losing a little over 2 feet of water in 6 hours' time.
And now, maybe even less than that. With the hill tide, can it be a hill incoming?
Yeah, it'll
or
be.
Would it matter? Would that be good or bad or non indifference?
Well, the difference is that what it does is that hill tide affects almost everything in Charlotte Harbor. Being a natural estuary, the harbor relies greatly on the Gulf for a lot of our species to survive. You know, all these mangrove systems provide structure and habitat for so many different little species that we don't think about. In particular, crabs. Crabs spawn on this same tide, but just like the tarpon and snook, they need that salinity for their eggs to float. So what they'll do is on that outgoing tide, they will actually come awake in the middle of the day, noon, 2 o'clock, as that tide starts to turn to go out, and they start to swim offshore. Because all of our swimming crabs, your blue crab, your iridescent swimming crab, your I forget the other guy. There's like 3 or 4 major species that all look very similar to a blue crab. They actually start to gather in little groups and start to migrate out like lemmings flowing with that outgoing tide to go offshore.
What you're saying is the crabs and stuff are not strong enough to swim against an incoming tide. So correct. When the tide starts coming in, they'll go to the bottom, hang on to the bottom, kind of dig in and wait. And then when the tide starts going out, they come up off the bottom, get into the water, and use the outgoing water to get out into the Gulf, into the salt water.
Correct.
They swim with the tide because once the tide starts coming in, that would push them back inside. So they just go to the bottom, hang on, and wait for another outgoing tide.
Correct.
Now, today, from 11:47 in the morning until 6 o'clock tonight, we have a very strong outgoing tide. And then tomorrow at noon until 6:37 is the hill tide tomorrow.
Correct.
So each day it's going to get a little bit closer in the dark. Now, the best hill tides are the ones that catch that twilight.
Correct. The ones that fall over into, say, 9 or 10 o'clock range. Now, going back to the outgoing tide part of it, what it is those crabs go offshore, they lay their eggs just as the tarpon do, and then on that really strong incoming tide, their eggs are fertilized now and starting to develop rapidly, and they get pushed back in. And they get scattered throughout the Gulf, but they really get pushed back into the harbor, into the mangrove system, where they can actually survive predation and grow up.
So when they're hatched, they swim back up into the harbor.
No, their eggs.
The eggs float in, but once they hatch, then they're going to swim and try and get up into mangrove roots, where if a predator comes, they play ring around the rosy with the roots, using it to hide from predators.
Correct.
So it's about getting out to the salt water where the eggs can be buoyant in the salt, fertilized, and then wash back up inside. It's kind of a mean system where they got to go all the way out there just to have the eggs come back in here.
Right. And in doing so, those crabs become a major food source for the tarpon. So the tarpon are in the pass in great numbers, congregating, getting ready to do their spawn because they're just kind of a social animal. They start to do a major feed as those crabs start to flush out.
You would think tarpon kind of got their attitude from the 1960s.
Yeah.
House parties with a jar of keys.
Right.
So.
You know, so that they're...
You didn't even crack a smile on that one.
I just shook his head.
I don't know, been there, done that.
Yeah, okay. No, I just said that.
No t-shirts, no photographs.
Usually I get a smile out of RJ for something.
He shook his head. I saw some movement over there of his head. The tarpon go into a major feed on all those crabs. And then as that tide starts to slow down, it's like a light switch goes off and those tarpon disappear. Literally 10,000 fish in a 2-square-mile area are gone. They just disappear. And they run anywhere from 5 to 20 miles offshore in big groups. And because we talked about them not laying a nest for laying their eggs, the females will start to go towards the surface. They will lay their eggs, you know, start expelling their eggs in the open water column, and the males actually swim through and milk them, similar how people have seen like salmon on TV do, where the salmon will get up next to the female and just start letting out his sperm to fertilize those eggs into the water column. And that's right at that slack tide, so that way the eggs are sitting there kind of suspended and the sperm has enough time to encapsulate those eggs to fertilize them. Once they're fertilized, they stay buoyant. They start to develop really quickly, and then they start
to
slowly...
It's only a matter of a few days.
Yeah, they start to slowly spread out through along the Gulf Coast, but they really start to push back in to the mangrove estuaries where they grow up. And, you know, tarpon are one of the really coolest things, I think, in saltwater as far as what they do. You know, that fish is the only marine fish that breathes air, number one. Number two, which plays a role
which
in
this air. Which has the option of breathing air.
Well, here's why it is so great that they can breathe air.
But it's not that they exclusively breathe air
a
dolphin.
No,
they
no.
have the option of being
they
underwater.
Have, they have above. Gills that can take right. the oxygen. But this is the reason why they probably developed over eons to breathe air, is that their fertilized eggs and basically their larva stage fish get pushed way back up into those mangrove swamps to where it's completely stagnant water, where there is absolutely no to minimal oxygen level. So they are able to come up and gulp air and dissolve that into their body system. But you know what their primary food source is when they're that small?
Insect larvae.
Mosquito larvae.
Yeah. So... You know, in the 1950s...
Pretty important animal.
In the 1950s and 60s, when you go back out on the flats around here, especially where you see a lot of grass, and even along in some of the mangroves, there are what's called mosquito ditches. And they were dug there to allow fish like tarpon and that to get back in around the grass to eat the mosquito larvae. Mm-hmm. They were actually man-made little cuts. And you can tell they're about a barge width wide, and they're dug down to 2 to 5 foot, and it was simply to let the fish get to the mosquito larvae. Mm-hmm. That's why they're called mosquito ditches. They were actually dug as mosquito control. Now, my favorite mosquito control here, on just a slightly different subject, was when they used to release the dragonflies.
Right.
But so many people complained about the dragonflies. I got a dragonfly in my house. You know, God, if that's your idea of life, move
right.
to another state.
Go somewhere else, yeah.
But they used to release tens of thousands of dragonflies every year but from helicopters. And they would go around and eat the mosquitoes. And so about 2-3 times a summer, there would just be clouds of dragonflies going everywhere. Because I think they have to eat like 5 times their weight a day in other bugs or something like that. And they're big, those big dragonflies. Mm-hmm. And they were cool to see. We had them in the store all the time. You go grab them, take them back outside, let them go. They're harmless.
Yeah, all the dragonflies and damselflies are all major mosquito feeders as they're developing. So, I mean, it's a lot better than that guy flying over your house spraying those pesticides.
Yeah, I mean, it was way cooler to see all the dragonflies. You know, people forget that we used to... They always think about going green now, and everybody talks, oh, I'm doing the green thing. No, you're not. You're really not. If you wanted green, we would release dragonflies again. We would put mosquito ditches in. We would do stuff that actually was working with nature, not just saying you were. You know, I drive an electric car, so the battery, it does more damage making the battery than the gas does. You know, give me a break. All right. Full moon is the big difference on the hill tide for tarpon. Now, if I'm going to fish for tarpon on a hill tide, and the reason they got the name hill tides was because when you looked at it on a graph style chart, it looks like a big hill. Like a, most of the time the tide just kind of goes up and down in a little wavy motion, but when you see it on graph form, it actually stands out like it's a hill. It goes normally above 2 foot. We exchange about 2 feet of water a day here, but most of the time it's not that. It's just kind of up and down, like, you know, little bumps. And then when you get these drastic tides, you know, from minus 2 up to 2.2, it literally looks like a big hill on a graph. And what were you looking at?
I was showing him it on a graph if he hadn't seen one before. I mean, he's a diver and seen lots of tide charts. I just didn't know.
It's on fishandfranks.com, weather and tides, tide button, and then just pick the area. It's all in graph form.
There you go.
So, yeah. He's been with me 20-some years, and he didn't think to look on our website.
Because I've got my number button memorized, where I just hit one button, and I can go to that for my graph.
Yeah, that's called efficiency.
Yeah.
Not efficiency.
Blind guy and computers are not very well, so I got to have the stuff memorized. Yours, I got to scroll through it. I like looking at it on my iPad because I can see it a little better.
But my website works on an iPad.
I do look at it on the iPad. That's what I was saying. I look at it on an iPad, but on this...
do I have to intervene here?
He's going to just bounce this back and forth where it doesn't look bad. So
no.
It's
all good.
Rules in the past are special. You can only have 3 rods in the water at one time. The operator of the boat must stay at the helm. Yes. If you're out there in Boca Grande Pass, you cannot... No more than 3 people on a boat can be fishing, 1, 2, or 3. If there's 3 people on the boat, the operator of the boat can be fishing, but he needs to be seated by the steering wheel. You can't be standing on the side of the boat. You have to be at the helm. If he hooks a fish, somebody else must come and sit at the helm. You have to be at the helm at all times.
Control of your vessel.
And there is a ticket involved. They're not giving you a warning over that.
No.
And the other thing about it is crabs are the most likely bait. Now, you got 2 ways of doing this. One, you can do a grouper style rig. What I do is I put 4 to 6 ounces of lead on my line, which is usually 50 pound monofilament, conventional reel, a 40 size pen fathom is a real nice one for this. 2 speed, lots of power, lots of speed. You need both those things. But I put the sinker on the line so it can slide freely up and down the line. Then I tie on 5 feet or so of 60-pound fluorocarbon, and I put my hook at the end of that. Now, with that 4 to 6 ounces of lead, that's going to go down, but the bait is going to trail off to the side of it. The current in Boca Grande Pass is usually strong enough where the lead weight will hold it down, and your bait trails off like a flag. So it doesn't usually hang below your sinker. It's usually out to the side of it. I figure with about, on a 5-foot leader, I'm going to get about 12 inches of drop, maybe 14. So I'm going to let that sinker hit the bottom, and I'm going to come up about 1 crank. And only coming up 2 cranks, but you can. So.
Well, and it depends on the gear ratio of your reel. You're talking about, even if you had it on low speed, you're 3 to 1. And with 50-pound mono on that 40 series fathom is,
I 30 think, some inches.
28, 30 inches, because I think on high speed it's 52 inches of 50-pound
right.
mono.
And
it's
low
pretty
gear,
impressive.
I'm going to come up 1 crank, 1.5 maybe. I don't want it that far off the bottom. And your bait's trailing off to the side. Now, what happens in Boca Grande Pass, they go up, gulp air, boy meets girl stuff, they're getting along, and all of a sudden, I want a snack. So they dive all the way to the bottom, 30, 40, 60, 80 feet of water, whatever it happens to be. They're down by the bottom to get a snack before they go back up and rejoin the thing. I mean, you know, It's the bar food of the Bunker Grand Pass. So,
and if you dive the pass at this time, if you're that crazy to go down to the bottom of the pass now, what you'll see is hordes of crabs going along the bottom. I mean, you know, you see crabs up towards the top every now and then, but that's not what the tarpon are interested. They want the easiest meals they can get, and that's all happening within 3 or 4 feet of the bottom.
And there's just tens of thousands.
I mean, it's amazing. Sometimes it looks like the sand is alive on the bottom of the pass and moving along in these green-gray patterns, and it's all crabs.
That's where people get so confused, because they see those crabs up on the surface and they see the tarpon boiling at the surface, so they go on to throw everything up there for them. That's not where you're going to get the majority of your hits. That bottom being so covered up with crabs, and there's other bait and shrimp and all kinds of stuff down there, because once those crabs are migrating, everything else kind of goes with them too. It's not just single, like, crabs. There's a lot of other stuff in there. But if you get your bait down and you're in with that, now how likely is it, if your bait's right next to the bottom, the tarpon's going to grab your bait and go down with it? I mean, he'd slam his head into the bottom.
Yeah, slim to none.
So he's not going to do that. If a tarpon hits and you feel a big, heavy jerk, it's because he was on for a while and he's already way off to the side one way or another of your boat. But that hit was way over there, right below you. If that tarpon hits, you want a rod that's fairly heavy. Kingfish rods are really good for tarpon fishing, 7-foot kingfish rods. What you're looking for is the tiniest dip at the end of the rod, just barely a bump, because that tarpon grabbed your bait, and now he's swimming back up with it. Remember, they're going to the bottom, grabbing a snack, and coming back to the surface. So you've got the tiniest little bump, barely feelable, but a lot of times you just see the tip of the rod take a little tiny dip. And there's visually sensitive, then there's actual where you can feel it sensitivity on the rod. And a good graphite rod is nice for that, because you can actually feel it as well as see it. Some of the rods, like the Bill Fisher 10-40 7-foot, you can see that bump better because the tip is really soft, but you're not really going to feel much of it in your hand. Where if you're using like a Pen, what's that higher end one?
Carnage,
7-foot Carnage with that real like tip King mackerel rod, you can see a little bit of that bump, but you're going to feel it a little bit in your hand too.
Right.
And what you have to do at that point involves cranking the reel like a mad person. When I'm tarpon fishing, I'm not using low gear when I start.
No.
I want to drop it down to the bottom, have it in low, and then as soon as I've got it set, I click it to high gear, because I need that 6-to-1. When that tarpon grabs the bait and he's swimming to the top with it, you've got a reel fast enough to take up the slack, put pressure to the fish, get the hook in him, all before that fish can swim 40 feet. So you're reeling so fast. If you don't feel ridiculously stupid reeling, you're not reeling fast enough.
Right.
You crank so fast. And you don't stop cranking until you feel the fish or see your bait or rig. Because until you actually see it, he could still be on there swimming up with it.
Yeah, you won't know until he actually launches right out in front of you or even 30 feet away from you. Because you are fishing, you know, Boca Grand Pass is our deepest area around here. And some of those, the deepest hole out there is like 72 feet of water.
So, but a lot even of catching worse up when they hit do. It in 35, 40 feet, because that only gives you a matter of seconds to crank up fast enough. 90% of the people in the pass while they're fishing have tarpon on the line. And most of them, when the tarpon spits the bait or the lure or whatever it out, and it falls back towards the bottom and hits the end of the line, that's when they notice that they think they had a bite.
Right.
And if you're in Boca Grand Pass trying to fish for one of these fish, and you say, I think I got a bite, it's too late already.
Yeah.
The fish is gone.
Anything that resembles anything like a bite, just start reeling.
If you think you had a bite, do not say anything. Do not do anything besides crank that reel. Reel, 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 reel as fast as you can. So the reason I slide my weight up and down the line is because when the tarpon hooks, I want that sinker to get as far away from the hook as possible. You're not allowed to have it get off of the line. So just having it slide up the line can often put that sinker 25 feet or more away from the fish. Much less likely he's going to shake it when he comes up out of the water. Now, the other combination you hear, that's really weird, the drumming music. You don't usually hear any of that.
No, the boys are editing on the other side of the
wall. Oh, is that what they're doing? Yeah, it's just funny. I'm used to, in my shop when we do our other shows, it's all noise and people walking in, you know, but here it's always nice and quiet. But we're, okay, the sinker's sliding up. We talked about hill tide, which is a very strong incoming or outgoing tide. Doesn't look any different, except you have a lot more water exchange in a very short amount of time.
It looks different at about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon when that sea breeze kicks in.
Yeah.
You got opposing wind and tides out there. It gets pretty peppy for a couple hours.
It's like a big old washing machine out there. Now, the other phrase is bow to the king.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I got my sinker sliding up down the line, I've got 5 foot or so a leader. I'm using at least a 5-aught hook, but usually a 6 or 7-aught to that crab, even when it's a smaller crab. I cannot use less than a 5-aught, or it won't go around the fish's jaw.
Right.
It's too small. It will never get inside or hook anything. But usually a 6 or 7-aught is what I'm going to have on there. I want it as small as possible for the little crabs, but I need some gap between the point and the shank just so I can hook a fish.
Right. Just to keep that hook buried in there.
And your bait can be anywhere from 1.5 inches to 3.5-inch crab.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
And bowing to the king is basically when those fish come up, they shake their heads so violently back and forth, and the sinker will go act like a pendulum, and it'll go in an opposite direction of them whipping their head, and they can actually get that sinker to create momentum to pull that hook right out of their mouth. So by bowing to that fish or pointing your rod down instantly at the water to put slack in your line helps reduce that extra pressure that is on that rod to keep all that tension to slack to tension to slack that can pop that
hook. And sometimes the fish will literally come up out of the water, shake, and land on the line.
Yes.
It will fall on the line, and if you're holding that line tight, and you've got a hook in them, you've got the weight of the fish, and boom, it all slams down on your line, the line's gone, the hook's pulled, something bad has happened.
Right.
It should be creating slack to the king. Now, it doesn't cause, it doesn't have near the sound creating slack for the king.
Right.
But
give the king some slack.
Yeah, give the king some slack. That's perfect. That's first time it's ever been uttered. Uttered by Robert right here on whatever the name of this show is.
Yeah, I'm writing it down.
Yeah. So what I do is I've had my rod up. I'm pulling. The tarpon starts coming out of the water. As soon as it clears the water, I point the rod in the direction of the tarpon and extend my arms as far forward as possible. If I have the room on the boat, I will take a step forward. Remember, if you're standing right next to the side of the boat, don't step forward.
Yeah. No. Bad idea.
Yeah, especially in the pass.
So it's all about getting some slack in the line so the fish can't use the pressure you're putting on it to get off of the line. Now, the other way of fishing the crabs out there on these hill tides is about with a spinning rod. Now, on our conventionals, it's 50-pound fluorocarbon line or 50-pound mono line. Usually mono. It's easier to deal with, put a fluorocarbon leader on it.
Correct.
And you're more than fine putting a swivel on there because you're using a sinker.
Yes.
The sinker and the swivel, any idiot, and I'm going to say the term with absolute certainty, that thinks a swivel will spook a fish, but a big 6-ounce chunk of lead won't, give me a break. It's the best way to join two lines together is with a swivel. And the sinker's only going up to the knot where you tied your leader on anyway.
Right.
The strongest connection between your leader and your line is a swivel. And that gives a sinker something to set on to keep it definitely away from your hook.
Right.
So That's my normal thing. Now, the other way I go is with a spinning rod, 50-pound braided line, not mono in this case. No. Mono is best on conventionals. The braid works better on those heavy spinning reels. I'm going to put about 4 feet of leader on. If you're tying the fancy line-to-line knots like an LG and whatever these other ones are, where you can reel it in, you can go as long as you like. Right. I don't do all that. What I'm looking for, and because it's braided, there's no harm, no foul using a swivel on there. I like the Mighty Minis from American Fishing Wire. I can have a 70-100-pound swivel that's so small you can barely see it. I just want to make sure it's big enough to put the leader through.
Right, it's a pretty tiny eyelet on that.
Yeah, the problem with these Mighty Minis is they're so small. You've got to pick one big enough you can get your leader material through, and you don't want to cut it. But braided line is 100% visible. Swivels are 100% visible. It makes no difference if you have it on the line. You just don't want to reel it into the tip of your rod and break the tip of your rod out, the glass and the tip. So line to line is a little easier on the tip of your rod. But what I'm going to do is go out into the pass, and to fish this, if your boat's moving fairly slow, it's still not going to work right. You've got to get your boat in reverse. The motor is going to be facing up the tide. So that reverse is, you want to be going a little bit against the current. And ideally, you want the boat to be just moving a little slower than what the current is. So what I'm going to do is cast up into the current. And half the time, I'll pull my rod back, and out the tip of the rod, I will pull 4 or 5 extra pulls of line out. What I'm trying to do is, by casting into the tide, is to get my bait to sink while it's drifting past the boat. And it will eventually go below the boat, down under the water, and then as the line starts to tighten up on the other side, it's going to start coming back towards the surface. So it's a big, you know, low valley sweeping of your bait, trying to get down as much as possible. You start off casting at the surface. It's going to sink as it goes down, being carried by the tide. As it gets to the end, you can see your line starting to come up. Once you notice it coming up, reel it back in and repitch it back. Any shark fishing? I'll finish this, but what's going on with the sharks?
With the sharks, I mean, there's a ton of those little guys, the fun-sized sharks, which you don't need giant tackle for. You know, your snook and redfish tackle will work. Your tarpon tackle is personally a little bit more ideal. But around Cape Hayes, all the way through Boca Grande Pass, the Intercoastal, and out to basically 10 miles where some of those shrimp boats are still at, there's a lot of the little sharks. Basically, if there's Spanish mackerel around, there's a very, very likelihood that there's the small sharks, because the small sharks are not only feeding on the Spanish mackerel, but a lot of them are feeding on the small groups of bait fish that all those Spanish mackerel are blitzing on. You know, so you've got black nose, Atlantic sharp nose, and a bunch of black tips. A lot of people are saying that they're catching spinner sharks out there because the thing jumped 6 feet in the air and blah, blah, blah. 99.9% chance it's a black tip, because spinner sharks really are not here this time of year. At water temperature gets above 70 degrees, chances of it being a spinner shark are pretty slim. And they're just very, very fun fighting fish. And numbers wise, if you've got guests down here, new anglers, just some of you want to get really interested in some pretty good nonstop action, it's not unusual to get 10 to 25 of those sharks in a day.
Just remember to bend your barbs down in your hooks if you're going to catch and release. If you're going to eat the shark, leave the barb on. But if you're not, bend the barbs down. 941-268-6460. You can text message us questions. Didn't get one today. Got them on most of the other shows, didn't, but not today. And text or email the pictures to me for the fishing report. That's Frank at fishandfranks.com. This coming Tuesday, we have Rapala Rapala is going to be at the store 3 o'clock and 6:30. James the Chum Guy is going to be there this Tuesday. Come down and see him. He's got a new product out where you dip the bait. If you got like squid or chunks of mullet or ladyfish, you can dip it into this powder, stick it to the bait, drop it down. It's doing really well in all the testing. We just started selling it. It just got it in the store. It's like $8 for a bag, but it's pretty cool stuff. According to two or three of the guys I talked to on the boat, the one guy using it, the other two guys not, it was literally 8-1 more fish caught by rolling it in this mix. It's kind of like a shake and bake for...
We're battering our bait.
Yeah. It's literally like a batter for it. But anyway, drifting those lines for the tarpon, we've caught fish. Robert and I both caught a lot of tarpon this way. 50-pound braid, 60-pound fluorocarbon leader. You can tie it line to line. And you're going to toss it with just that 6-0, 7-0 hook on it with a small crab. Throw it up into the current. Now, if the current starts moving too fast, you're going to have to put one of the pinch-on weights. Think of a split shot, but it's a little longer, looks more like a rubber core. And we all started out using rubber core weights, but they fall off a lot. Ends up costing you a lot of money. The pinch-on is an elongated split shot with two tabs that can be folded over the line. Stay on the line good. They don't fall off. All it's going to do is get your bait down in the water a bit. And you want it to be able to get down 10 to 20 feet or more as it's, drifting past the boat. So it's really cool, and it's a great way to get out and do those fish without having to get into packs of the tarpon.
Right.
And without having to get into the packs of boats.
And those fish are going to move around a lot anyway, so you may think you're staying on the outside of these anglers, but those fish will move. And next thing you know, you've got tarpon all around you, and then the boats all follow those tarpon. So main thing is just be cautious and aware of what's going on around you and do your best to catch those fish.
Now, next week I'm going to pre-predict the show. We're going to talk a little bit about proper hook, a proper way to put a hook in a bait. Started with English John. He's behind my house fishing in the canal, and he's getting lots of bites, but he's not getting fish. And I said, well, John, why are you putting the hook in that way? Well, that's the way you do it, isn't it? I said, well, it's not the way I do it. And so I re-rigged his shrimp on the hook, and now instead of bites, he's catching fish. Right. He was getting like 1-2 fish to the, landing 1-2 fish. You know, fishing there for the morning, he's up to like 8 or 10 or more now. Nice. Per trip.
Nice.
And the only difference is how we put the hook in the bait. So that's what we're going to be doing next week. We're going to be talking about bait fish, cut bait, shrimp, all these different things, how you put the hook in them. So bring your mental imaging, because we're going to get descriptive, and, Robert will be really strange about this, and there's no telling what RJ will do.
Right. So,
Yeah. You're such a ball of energy.
Well, I'm getting old. I'm sorry. Things change.
Getting?
Yeah. Getting.
Yeah, okay. That's cool. Yeah. Anyway, like I say, we got seminars started back. We're back at Luigi's.
That went over really good, too. A lot of people were very, very happy with that, so they're excited to see them.
The wives loved it.
A lot of the guys liked it, too, because their wives were happy. That concept,
yeah, that works. That works a number of ways. Kind of stuff,
but the women love the meetings at Luigi's because they get dinner and a show.
Yeah.
And they enjoy coming to the ones at the Fish and Frank's. But to be able to sit down, have dinner, relax, enjoy the fishing show, and just kind of get it all in one, they were so happy that we were back at Luigi's. And we're booked there all the way through into next year. Every month we'll be back at Luigi's. It's not going away.
Same seminar button.
Well, we're waiting for the music. We know what to do. You're the commander and controller.
Yeah, but I watch the time.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't have any.
I'm right on time,
Frank. I can read. Well, Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and our captain and commander control officer RJ up in the command center. But if you're really unlucky, we'll be back next week. And if you're really lucky, you can catch us on fishandfranks.com. There's more podcasts there. See ya. Bye. I'm going fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish. Okay.